Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
The Weirdos Book Club.
Join us.
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
This week's book guest is Big Swiss by Jen Began.
What's it about? Greta transcribes the intimate therapy sessions of Flavia and then ends up meeting her by accident in the dog park.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, Greta is an A-grade weirdo and she kisses her dog on the mouth, on the reg.
In this episode, we discuss
lesbian Instagram,
debonair dogs,
sex chats,
coconut oil,
trauma,
therapy,
and journeys.
And joining us this week is Susie Ruffle. Susie is a brilliant stand-up. She's been on Live at the Apollo. She's hosted Live at the Apollo. She's been on The Last Leg, loads of panel shows. She does their brilliant, very funny, like-minded friends with Tom Allen.
Check them out. They're amazing. Trigger warning, in this episode, we discuss assault and suicide.
Susie.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming.
We've definitely not been chatting for half an hour.
Half an hour already.
We've just met.
Yeah.
Hi. Wow, Susie with a Y or an I?
It's with an I, but thanks for asking.
So you posted about enjoying this book.
I did.
Yeah, so I want to know the story. I always like the story of like, how did you find the book? Was it recommended to you?
It was recommended by a mutual friend of all of ours.
Oh.
Kaylee Llewellyn.
Oh, Kaylee Llewellyn. Shout out to our friend Kaylee.
Kaylee,
hi, Buck.
Who is adapting this?
Kaylee is an actor, comedian, writer, and she wrote two amazing series called In My Skin for the BBC, and she is down to adapt this for HBO.
She messaged me and was like, Babby, gotta read this.
She didn't message me that, so I'm annoyed.
Well, I'm playing the dog.
So maybe that's why.
Which dog, though? There's so many dogs in this
Pinion.
Book. Pinion, the little one.
the little one.
I should be Pinion.
That part is taken, okay? You can pay one of the bees.
I'd be a good bee.
I knew I was coming to do this today, obviously, and last night I dreamt that I shot someone in a room with some bees.
Oh.
And I said to them, find the queen bee and you can leave. And then I woke up.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm stressed out. Maybe you guys.
Are you the new taskmaster?
Yeah, just bees. I'm the bee master.
You're the bee master.
We are talking about Big Swiss.
Are we?
And we say, if you want to get on this show, what you need to do is post about books you're reading and Sarah will message you.
Yes,
because there's nothing more wonderful than sharing someone's enthusiasm for something because you really enjoyed this.
I did really enjoy
it. I really enjoyed it.
But it's unusual to enjoy something so much when you sort of detest both of the main characters.
Oh, did you detest them?
I kind of thought they were both gross in different ways.
I like fascinating, eccentric people I don't have to spend time with. I like reading about them.
Sure.
I wouldn't want a house share with anyone in this book.
I think it's a real testament to the writing when you're like, I don't like these people, but
it took me ages not to like Greta. Like, I actually liked Greta for ages because of something I just thought, I could just see why she was making those decisions.
Doing
sometimes.
What we all secretly want to do. I think that's the thing that's really interesting.
Yes.
Like, you know, if I was like, guys, I'm just going to leave my diary there.
Oh, God.
And it's not like a day-to-day diary. It's just sort of the big things that I think are important in comedy and what I think about every comedian I've ever met. I'm just going to leave it there. Don't look at it. Don't touch it.
Do you know what? I wouldn't read it if you told me not to, but Sarah
I've already
would.
Read it.
Yeah, Sarah
and
would.
And
I want you
mine.
To know that I am such... I would not read it.
You wouldn't read it?
I'd keep secrets. I don't tell people things. Why this? friendship worked.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to tell. There's some shit I need to get off my plate.
I will not tell anyone.
I've got to tell someone.
Yeah. No, I don't tell.
So just to listeners. So that you've got a therapist and you've got the person transcribing. That's Greta transcribing the therapy sessions. So
she transcribes.
Susie, you would want to listen to people's therapy sessions.
Sex therapy sessions, we should say. He's his name is. He's a sex
Bruce.
Therapist.
Bruce. Yeah, but he changes his name to
birth name.
Yeah. I think secretly we all want to, maybe not you, Carrie Ed.
No, I want to listen, but I wouldn't tell the secrets. That's the thing.
Okay, there you go.
No, but that's
I'd
about.
Want to listen.
Yeah, you'd want to listen.
Oh, I want to know the secrets. Well, that's why I don't tell, because then people tell
me.
Well,
that's
things.
What Susie was saying. She was saying she left a diary there. Would you read it? Yes, she would.
If she told me not to, I wouldn't.
I love hearing it.
So if you were having to transcribe them,
oh, dream job.
Because that's your job. It's your job.
I felt like I sort of got Greta.
Yeah.
And then she gets sort of...
She does go more mad.
Yeah. She goes more mad.
Yeah.
It's a real insight into people with mental health problems that haven't really got them organised.
Or people who've been through really traumatic events.
Yeah.
I found it so funny. And I found it more funny on a reread. Because I wasn't reading it for story. All of my notes say, so funny.
I think maybe
she told him about her last boyfriend. He'd had money, a new experience for Greta, but zero upper body strength. He could barely hold himself on top of her, and when he did, she felt like she was being made love to by a large trembling finger. They were together for 2 years.
Yeah, that is good.
It's so funny. It's so funny, but it's dark funny.
Well, we should say as well that so Greta is a transcriber for a sex therapist, and some of the stuff she's listening to is deeply traumatic. And Greta herself, her mother took her own life. And is still dealing with that. Greta is not dealing with it, I guess, is probably the safer way to say it. So there's lots of trauma, and the character that she starts really listening to, Big Swiss, has had a really, really traumatic thing, violent thing happen to her. And then Greta meets Big Swiss in real life. And basically,
by accident at the beginning, by omission and sort of lying to her.
Yeah. Yes. Starts a relationship
with her. A romantic relationship with her. And it is a massive betrayal.
Yeah, because she knew a lot of stuff, and Big Swiss felt like, wow, you really connect with me.
You're a mind reader.
Yeah, because I listen to your therapy sessions. But it's such a sort of, like you said, like the diary, it's a very tantalising idea that if you... You know, when you do meet someone, you don't know everything about them and you don't know their background, what happened to be given that key.
And then to hear them talking about you.
In therapy.
That's the bit.
Yeah.
But the thing is, no one's actual therapy would be as interesting as the therapy in this book.
Yeah.
Like, there's stories within stories, which is just the greatest thing. You know, when you're meeting a character and then you meet other characters in their lives through these little vignette stories. That's why I enjoyed reading it so much.
I wanted to ask you both, this is so, prepare yourself for a really wanky question.
Okay.
Is it an allegorical novel?
I don't know what that means.
Okay. So it's like the characters both have trauma and they deal with it in different ways. So is Jen actually, as well as telling you a story, she's trying to posit a kind of higher metaphor of like, this is how we deal with trauma. Because you've got Big Swiss dealing with her trauma in a very blunt, like it doesn't define me at all. And then you've got Greta, who has like ruminated, lived with, written about, held her trauma really, really closely. And at the end of the book, it's just the first note I wrote. Yes, I regret opening it now.
No. I'm pleased that you did.
Thank you.
Now I know what allegory is. And people do say that. And sometimes you're not in a situation where you can ask.
And I've already been given the opportunity. Did you notice my pause of like, I'm not confident enough of my definition of it to instantly tell you. So I was like, what does allegory mean? But it's, I guess it's metaphorical, isn't it?
I thought it was a herb, so I'm quite relieved that I've learnt this.
Is Jen Began using these characters to make a bigger point about how we deal with trauma? Because that's what I slightly felt towards the end, Greta and Flavia, Greta and Big Swiss for me, sort of became unreal, and it became so much about how they had dealt with their trauma.
I
didn't think it was an allegory. I found both of them really aspirational. Because yes, very traumatic things happened.
Yeah.
And yet with both of them, I was like, I wish I was like that. And I wish I was like that. I think they're so
what
cool.
What bits did you wish you were like?
So with Big Swiss, the way that she deals with something, which is that it happened, but it doesn't define her. The fact that she hates the word trauma.
Mm.
She said, don't use that again. And she had these certain words in therapy. She was like, don't ever use journey. It makes me feel sick.
There were certain things
where I absolutely knew what she had a problem with. Can you not use the word journey ever again? It makes my skin crawl. I'm not crazy about tools either.
I
loved her attitude to therapy.
Yeah, that was funny.
I didn't know if that's how she's sort of not dealing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been dealt with, but I think she's just put it in a box.
Yeah. And there's no almost like no emotion to it, whereas Greta is all emotion.
Yeah, way
that,
too much.
And that's slightly what the connection between them is too. And I felt like at the end, I felt like the writer was having a discussion about trauma rather than the characters just having their story. I was like, oh, this is two versions of trauma, and she's put one version in one character and one version in this. And now what happens if you meet the unemotional with the
super emotional
rumination, refusing to let go?
Do you think Jen, and I'm going to just call her Jen.
Yeah,
do you think Jen is saying, like, guys, try and pitch your trauma somewhere between these two mad bitches?
Yeah, I do. I think she's doing two extremes, and I don't think...
I think she's saying trauma's so funny. In that it's common. This sentence, I'm just going to read you, this is page 8, so this is really early on.
She's setting her bar early, yeah.
I'm not one of those trauma people. This is Big Swiss in her session. And then Om says, what's a trauma person? And she says, someone who can't stop saying the word trauma. Trauma people are almost as unbearable to me as Trump people.
I thought she definitely finds the comedy in trauma and the way that our society currently treats trauma,
it's
traumatizing, it's triggering and all this. And I think she's definitely spoofing that and like pulling it apart in the character of Big Swiss. But then towards the end, because they do both suffer these hugely traumatic incidents in their life that have completely defined them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Greta's continues to define her and she sort of learns to hold it. But Big Swiss ends up defining her husband. Like, it ends up still hurting her in a completely new way. Mm. So I was like, it's sort of a big investigation of trauma. She's satirizing it, but also being like, what do we do with trauma?
And is that how you make talking about trauma for an entire book more tolerable?
Yeah,
I think so. Jokes.
Yeah.
It's the Edinburgh Festival, guys.
Yeah, she's definitely managing to give those characters, I mean, horrific things. And we should say, like, you know, they do go into what's happened to Big Swiss a little bit, and it is horrible, but then it is treated in such a...
Well, there's jokes even in the description of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Especially because Om is such a funny character.
Om is such a funny character.
Yeah, when he's like, oh, you've been to India?
Yeah.
And she's like, and she's like unpacking like something horrific that
happened.
Like, where? Oh, yeah, the north, I've been there. Anyway, carry on. Yeah.
Or the gong. Are you looking at the gong?
Yeah.
Do you want a gong bath? She's like, I've just told you about this horrific violent attack. Yeah. We could do a gong bath.
Yeah, that'll probably... Yeah, anger's good sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, there's sort of a trigger warning in the book before she starts talking about...
Yes, like, that's true.
Om gives
the trigger warning. I didn't know if that was just a line that... just something that Om was saying, or whether that was something that the writer was going... This is a lot.
It's both. Yeah. It's both,
so I'm letting you know
this
is a lot.
It's what a human being would do. It's what we're doing now very carefully because we would recommend this book wholeheartedly, but always with a caveat of, you know.
Brackets, trauma.
Greta is listening to Big Swiss's therapy sessions before she hears what's happening. She already loves her. She already loves, and you know, she is Swiss and she's very blunt and she's very un-American in her take on her life. Mm. And she also gives Om a lot of shit, which his other clients don't do. They like want him. They're like, yes, you're right, Om. Where she's like, what are you saying? This doesn't make sense. And then when Greta hears her trauma, I felt like Greta fell in love with her even more because she suddenly understands this person through the lens of trauma, which is what she is also dealing with.
I thought that Greta was sort of, to begin with, was like assuming that it would be like, oh, kind of poor little rich girl.
Yeah, exactly. And then when she's beautiful and blonde. What bad can happen to her?
You know, talks about, oh, she's the kind of, you can tell that she's the kind of woman that like makes people's heads turn, but also dogs or something. There's like some unusual sentence like that. But it made me think that as soon as she realised that Big Swiss was a bit broken too.
Yes.
She was like, oh, we're the same. Okay, yeah. Now I need to know more about you. I'm desperate.
And you feel that from Big Swiss as well. Like, Big Swiss is like, I don't know why I'm drawn to you. But they're both extremely broken and holding this.
But is she only drawn to her because she thinks that she has this, like, insight into her life that nobody else has?
Yeah, it's weird,
like, does she actually like, would she like her? Or maybe that's just me. Like, when they talk about the house.
Greta is living with her friend Sabine, who lives in an insane converted windmill. Isn't it a Dutch windmill at one point? And
it's like from the 1700s,
yeah,
maybe?
There's bees living in the 60, living room.
60,000.
My housemates
are 60,000 bees.
Yeah.
And they, rather than getting rid of the beehive, they got someone to come in and put glass around it or something so they could see the bees.
Yeah.
There's maggots. There's all sorts going on.
Makes
in this house.
My skin crawl.
Yeah.
I think I dislike Greta because of how gross her house is. But I really like things really tidy.
Yeah. The
Come Again, on, it's very aspirational. Very aspirational.
You haven't got maggots.
Little baby donkeys. I've had maggots.
not now, but in your youth, when we were living together.
Probably during COVID, probably had maggots a few times. You had mice for years.
Yeah,
before
she
kids.
Wouldn't. She wouldn't deal with the mice because they. She wanted. She was like their friends.
You thought it was inhumane.
Oh, it was just admin as well, and I didn't mind them. I didn't mind them running through the front room. But
at one point, she suggested leaving them a note. There was one point.
What did you think they could read English?
Look, the thing is, the mice came in the house. I've got a dog called Mouse, and they ate from his bowl. That's funny.
That is funny.
I'm talking about the mice prior to that. The mice way
proto
back.
Mice. Well, your mum's house.
No, the other mouse place you had mice.
At Carriad's mum's house, a mouse jumps on my head.
We've never had mice in that house.
Mouse.
We've never had mice in that house ever in my entire life. Sarah moved in. We got the biggest field mouse we've ever seen in life. Moved into her bedroom. Because she wouldn't take the food
because
downstairs.
Because they can tell I'm an ally.
My mum,
how did your mum deal with that? Because my mum would have been quite rageful.
My mum and Sarah have a strange symbiotic Essex bond where things that I would not be allowed to get away with, she sometimes, I feel, gives Pasco like...
Yeah. Harriet's mum was very kind to me.
So my mum was like, Sarah, you need to take those plates down. We've got a mouse. And also Sarah was so upset about it. Like, there's a mouse in the room. My mum's like, well,
couldn't sleep.
That's the plates.
But he also, the mouse, he got more confident. So first of all, if I put the light on, he'd be quiet or run away.
Yeah.
Third night in a row, he was in my shoe. So yeah. I went towards him thinking he'd run away. He didn't. He ran towards me and then jumped onto my head and over the top.
Mum was a day, mum, he's wearing your pyjamas.
That's it. No, he lives there now. So I moved out.
Yeah, moved
he
out.
He won. While we're on this wonderful subject, can we talk about animals? Because there's
lots
of animals in
there.
Yes,
there are lots of animals in there, yeah.
Susie, you've got a beautiful cat.
I do have a beautiful cat,
You are in love with. Is that
I
fair
do
to
love
say?
Her. Yeah, I would say that she would say, since my baby's turned up.
Yeah.
Oh, has she come to drop down in the pecking order?
I mean, so when we were like getting my daughter's bedroom ready and we like put her crib in there and whatnot, the cat got in the crib and was like, oh, finally a bed.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Little baby, get a biddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, they've finally done my room. Aww. I don't know why they've got me a wardrobe, but okay. Like,
yeah. I guess I'll be one of those TikTok cats.
Yeah. I guess that's who I am now. They've got me some books.
Is it Velma?
Velma, yeah.
Yeah.
And now my daughter loves her and Aww. She makes a real display of like kissing her.
Oh, good.
And she'd be like, just on the head, kiss her on the head.
Like, does Velma like being kissed?
Yeah, I mean, she puts up with it, but she just loves human contact. Yes, she's such a non-cat cat.
Oh, okay. So she's not upset with your daughter.
No, she's like, fine. Mm.
A new person to worship me.
I'm beautiful.
Yeah. You're sleeping in my crib.
I'll share.
Your cat's become Tom Allen.
Yeah. Oh, no, I imagine my cat to have a German accent.
Oh, Velma. Oh.
Yes.
Velma, yes.
Like, she sort of walks into a room and goes, oh, you again. And then walks out. And then...
That's really nice.
That's what
I love this imagine. Crib.
Yeah. Oh, this is nice for me, yeah.
Good, yeah. So the baby sleep here first, then I will. Okay. Yeah.
We sleep the same time. Sometimes I sleep in daytime, she doesn't. So that's sort of this child, she's kissing me again.
But when you've had that kind of relationship with an animal,
sure.
You absolutely understand, even if it's not with dogs, the kind of love that you have.
Greta has for her dog Pinyon.
Little description. Yeah. His kisses were dry, sweet perfection. His breath smelled like licorice. She'd never known such pure and uncomplicated love. Because that's how I feel about the love. Don't make this the snippet.
Please do.
The love that exists between a human and an animal.
You definitely have that for dogs, Stephanie.
Well, I really like dogs and admire them. But the actual, like, the pure, uncomplicated relationship was with Mouse, who taught me how to love. And I don't think I'd have a husband or children if it hadn't been for him.
Oh, Mousy.
I know.
Why is that? What did Mouse bring?
I think it's the non-verbal communication. I think it's just you're projecting love onto someone and taking care of their needs. And maybe
Susie's point is that there were other dogs.
Yeah. Like, was there something that Mouse brought to the table?
Mouse is my first dog from the beginning.
Oh, yeah, true. Because others you like inherited from other people,
My mum used to buy my sister dogs every time she went into hospital. And she was a child, so she didn't look after them. So we had a couple of dogs at university.
Came to stay, ended up staying a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. So other dogs. Mm. But Mouse was the one that you chose.
Yeah.
Did you have Mouse from a puppy?
Yeah, because someone had taken him away from his mum when he was only a few weeks old. So someone had adopted him in flats near me and couldn't look after him because he was crying all night. Because they wouldn't let him sleep in their bed. And she went mad, she went, he'll cry all night. And I was like, he'll be in my bed. And she's like, he'll be fine. And he was.
So how did you end up getting him? Did you just meet someone on the street and say...
No, they advertised him on the internet. I think the writer must absolutely love dogs.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Because Flavia also has an amazing dog. Yeah. The dogs are described like any of the human characters.
Yeah, they're big characters.
They have
characters.
Personalities. Like, Greta thinks of opinion of, it's like being well travelled and debonair.
Yeah,
debonair,
yeah,
is this word that she would use about her dog, but not about a man.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, it's also a lovely bit, isn't it? She, Greta's in this very safe relationship, and he's the one who suggests that they get a dog, and then basically she gets Pignon. She realises she doesn't need this man.
Well, he's worried. He says, "I don't want us to get a dog because I think you'll love them and not need me anymore." That's exactly what happens.
Because she's like, "This dog's so amazing," and they break up, and she's like, "Obviously, I'm taking Pignon." I mean, I agree with you, Pignon and what's Big
Silas?
Swiss's dog Silas. Yes. Are as strong characters. And the bit where she properly meets Big Swiss, when Pignon is attacked by another dog and Big Swiss rescues her dog, which I was like, that's a very big metaphor of the power Big Swiss has, is that she will take you from trauma and whisk it away, because like that's what she does to Pignon, isn't it? Like Pignon's being pinned down.
I took this book so literally.
Oh, I took it so
metaphorically. You've taken a lot of the fun out of it. It's just like, yeah, she just wrestled a dog.
There's a bit at the end where Om says to Greta, literally like, you are a metaphor. He says to her, this is a metaphor you're living. And then that, when I read that, I was like, this whole book is a metaphor. Everything started falling away. But before that, I was very literal. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And then I was like, oh, Big Swiss rescues the dog and the bees. What did the bees mean?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I want to talk, because it's set in this place called Hudson, which I haven't really heard of.
No.
But it sounds a bit Brighton-y.
Sure.
It's got Brighton vibes liberal and it's obviously sounds
wellness
hipstery. Mm-hmm. It sounded like it was written maybe sort of the birth of hipster kind of coming in, which I think we don't, it doesn't quite exist now.
Yeah, she said something about like one of the 8 independent coffee shops.
Yeah, yeah, it's that vibe. How did you relate to Hudson being someone who lives in Brighton? Like, did you feel that vibe of a town that slightly is almost a joke in itself, even though it's a wonderful place to be?
Yeah, I think that I did make that link, that it was, I think that, I mean, you just get very, I know those people. That's what I think that I, you know, I see those people walking their dogs.
Yeah.
I see those women in linen. You know, I know the people that are microdosing.
Yeah.
It's very much, I mean, there are so many therapists in Brighton.
That's what I liked.
Like if you want an acupuncturist, it's
too many.
Well, there's 7 on your street. Like, how many acupuncturists does one need?
And because we both lived in Brighton, it's nice to live somewhere like that.
Oh, I love it.
But I thought she satirised that area very well, that everyone knows everybody's business as well.
Yeah.
And actually they are all sleeping each other, they are all messed up. It's not, despite all the therapy and the wellness and the acupuncture, everybody's still quite fucked up. It's not like everybody's fine.
Again, isn't it? It's about how much of the book is about sort of people sort of owning their trauma. Certainly it feels like that sort of town is where people, they're the people that Big Swiss hates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is the people that are constantly talking about their journey and their trauma and the tools they're using to get through their journey.
Which is funny that she lives there. That's the other thing. I was like, it's funny that someone like Big Swiss, but then there is that other side, I guess, to Brighton, like the big nice houses, that's nice area to live in and it's beautiful. And, you know, that's what slightly confused me. I was like, why do they live there when they aren't part of that set? I really liked the discussion of her Swissness.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was obviously talking from 2 Americans. So Greta's American, her husband's American, of how challenging they find someone who doesn't keep the peace or isn't polite. Mm. And there's a great moment where Big Swiss kind of has a go at them both because they can't tolerate somebody judging them or somebody saying something about them. And she describes in Switzerland that you look away. Do you remember this bit on the train?
Yes.
She says, like, in Switzerland, it's polite to look away knowing someone is assessing you. And then they will look away, that so you can judge their shoes and their trousers and their hat and their bag and decide who they are. But she's like, it's polite. It's a form of politeness that I allow you to judge me and I give you space to do it. Whereas in America, that would be seen as like, how dare you judge me?
Yeah. And maybe that's why she lives in Hudson, because she can just look at it for what it is.
And be like, it's fine.
It's kind of terrible. I kind of like it. I don't like her. I like them.
Yeah.
That seems fine.
But also I thought it's interesting that they kept calling it like her Swissness, which I thought is also quite an English thing as well. I found it interesting that it was Americans being like, oh, that's so rude and so blunt. And I was like, I feel it's almost a bit Englishy as well, because we're not so...
It's just other to America, isn't it? Yeah. It's just anything that is not sort of... I'm
going to be polite
America's to you. America's such a bizarre place in that like it's like, we will hold the door open, but we are allowed to shoot you. Like, it holds so many things, doesn't it?
There's
have a nice day, but also fuck you and your rights.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a, and so I guess that's...
Which I thought was interesting. I feel like Big Swiss says that when she was like, you're so oversensitive. Mm. She says it to both of them, doesn't she? She was like, you can't cope with someone saying, well, I think this about you. Because it's like, how dare you? How dare you? She's like, but why do you care? She's like, who cares? They assess me, they judge me, but I'm not bothered by their assessment of it. Whereas, Greta is like crippled under this, like, what do people think of me? And I'm a failure and I haven't done what I'm supposed to do. And have I made the book not fun?
I don't think I see Greta as crippled. I believe her when she says she's free. Like, her whole description, like how she found Sabine, how her life has been, how she's been able to like just go through these breakups and these jobs. I loved her untetheredness to everything apart from
that's
her dog.
The perfect word for her.
I love descriptions of most of the characters because I found them so... original when the writing.
And she really went to town. Like, every person had four things to describe.
I loved the whole thing about Big Swiss having an aura that's so big.
Yes.
It made made her claustrophobic. Yeah. She couldn't have people face to face with her.
And she couldn't stay in a basement.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, there was flat ceiling. There were just things I was like, oh God, I love this woman.
Yeah.
Like, I love this woman existing, walking around. So I asked you two a question about the representations of sexuality in this book.
I thought you were going to say dogs. I was like...
Back to dogs. Kissing dogs on the mouth, go.
Of sexuality, go on.
When, especially on a reread, I thought men are so absent from sex in this book.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, massively.
And so it felt really... It reminded me a little bit of Felicity Ward used to have some stand-up about how when men imagined women masturbating, they imagined it being really dainty. And just like, it looks like this. And it was such an Australian, like, and actually there's something really, and I think maybe joy is the word, or maybe it's liberation, about depictions of sexuality that aren't for male titillation.
Oh yeah, it felt like a very female, I felt like that, a female joy in the way that they have sex and love each other,
and even descriptions of other sex.
Yeah,
it had that even in some of Om's other clients.
Well, also the interesting thing with Big Swiss is that we find out she is having sex with her husband, but it's only to get pregnant as well. Like, that's sort of the transaction that's happening over there.
Yeah,
whereas we know the sex she's having with Greta is just like absolutely just whatever the pair of them want to do. There were a couple of things that shocked me. The coconut oil, freezing the coconut oil to shove it up Big Swiss's ass, or was it Big Swiss shoving it up? I was just like,
were you surprised by that? You need to come to Brighton more.
I know, it's been too long. I've lived in North London. I was like, oh my God. Made me blush because I am a prude with these things.
Do you blush at books?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Do you not?
I love that you do ostentatious, because you really are from that time. It's just like, I was reading a book. I couldn't stop blushing. I had to leave.
It was more just like,
talk about put sex in books as like, and then the characters are having sex, and it feels really relevant to their relationship. Whereas this sex felt very relevant.
Oh yeah,
to getting to know them.
And joyous. It felt like the only time these characters were happy.
And it was bigger than just pleasure, because it felt like it was exploration and knowing a person.
Yeah, and it didn't feel like when you're sometimes reading a sex scene, you're like, oh God, this is like, I wasn't blushing and embarrassing. I was more just like, I didn't know people did that with coconut oil.
I've underlined the description of their vaginas.
That's so weird. Every time we meet up, you say that about someone else. I'm like, oh, go on, Sarah.
I've got Susie's diary.
I mean, that would be from quite a long time ago.
I loved this bit where she's telling her that... So Greta is telling Big Swiss that her brain reminds her of Siberia, but you're down there is like South America.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they have a conversation about which country in South America it would be.
It does sound much funnier on your reread. I think I was really overthinking it.
I think Sarah reads everything slightly sarcastic. I think Sarah should do all people's books.
Yeah, just really enjoying it, this trauma. Yeah.
I read it thinking Jen Began has definitely had sex with women. The thing that I think that people that don't have sex with women, two women that are having sex, is that there is so much chat.
Yeah.
So I would say like that, and no one knows when it ends. That is the thing, because women can just carry on for, you know, a long time.
So it's not as simple.
No. Like, I've met up for brunches with lesbians and been like, they've had an hour's sleep. They've just got together and they've had an hour's sleep.
Oh, really?
And it will like, around the table, and you'll be like, have you guys not slept very much? And then they'd be like, because nobody knows when it ends.
So do you need like a referee? Are you blushing?
You're just making it sound brilliant. That's what I was like. Oh,
you sound brilliant.
Nice.
I'm thinking I needed a flag or something.
Sorry. That's what I think. The sort of sex interspersed with conversation.
Yeah. It felt like they felt very real, those characters.
I think that's so fascinating, because when you're straight, like, and I've never had sex with a woman.
You did a really sad look there, like, I'm a prude.
I was sort of questioning.
I'm a Regency woman, so.
Yes.
Oh, babe, Regency woman.
Oh, yeah. They were.
Because also, imagine how bad men were at sex in those days.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that's what I was going to say about the conversation.
Yeah.
If a man ever does try to talk during sex, it's always like, shh.
What sort of chat would it be?
Trying to be sexy.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's not chat. It's not, you know, it's not like chat, is it?
Because I think that what happens between Big Swiss and Greta is that some of it's sexy chat, and then other bits are like just conversation about feelings or stuff, or just like processing.
Or even like, they sound like two very good friends, because there's that bit at the end when they're sort of really blunt with each other. Yeah, but you do this and your problem with trauma is this. Yeah, but the reason, and I was like, that is such a, like, that sounded like two friends trying to work out an argument. Women friends trying to work out an argument.
But I would say that's how lesbians work out
that's,
an argument.
Lesbians sound like women friends.
There's something about two women being in a relationship where it's, not in all relationships, obviously, and I've had bad relationships with women, but in good relationships, certainly in my marriage, my wife and I are like, here's the truth of the scenario. This is how you made me feel. And it will be like, on our way home from a night out, and it will be like, you said that thing. Yeah, the sex stuff was sort of explicit, but I wasn't shocked by it. But then I read a lot of lesbian fiction.
I would
say I'm very into... I'm very across lesbian.
Do you know what's like? Yeah. Recently having two children, and coconut oil is all about dealing with a C-section scar. So I was like, oh, I didn't know people were using coconut oil for it. Well, I have. And I am interested in what they did.
But I think as well, the frankness. When you're having sex with a boy, and I did do it a couple of times.
She says with regret.
You know what the thing that you do is.
Yeah, yeah.
You put that bit in that bit. Mm-hmm. Great. I think with women having sex with each other, there's a lot more tinkering.
Mm.
And everyone needs to be tinkered in a slightly different way.
Which really is true of all women.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's probably true of straight couples that are having great sex, don't get me wrong. But
Not another narrative where it's like, you could just put that in that and it's done.
Yeah, and I think as well, you have to talk about it where you go, oh, your ex might have liked that there, but that's not for me because it's slightly different. I'm really honest in this podcast.
This is great.
It's really, I think it's important that the nation hears.
Kat Cohen, I'm almost 100% certain it's Kat Cohen, had a very funny line about having sex with women where she said she assumed that she'd be very good at it, but it's actually like putting on eyeliner. You know how to do it yourself, but doing it on someone else is actually quite hard. And I thought that is the best.
That's a brilliant description.
That is because I think that's... And so all of that stuff about how they are so... Do you know, I was tempted to say vulgar then, but it's... I don't want it to be vulgar.
No, they're just honest. Just like they're just really very honest about it, aren't they?
Explicit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's unembarrassed. It's,
yeah.
Yes.
And it has to be, because it's a book where a sex therapist, a transcriber, is writing up sex therapy sessions. So in a lot of the other couples' sex, there's another couple that she, you know... where she hears both sides of, they both have therapy with arms.
Oh, yes.
And she's describing how her husband said her pussy smelled like an aquarium in Chinatown. And she's so pissed off. And then you hear the man's version where he says that her pussy tasted like fish sauce.
Yeah, and he's like, I put that shit on
everything. Like, it's so tasty. And that's such a funny example of how what you hear and what you say are very different things.
Yeah, right.
Especially in a relationship. So that... And it's never gratuitous. And I don't think even the coconut oil is supposed to shock you. It's supposed to say, this is the kind of stuff that people do.
No, and I don't, it was just me being prudish, and but I'm just being surprised.
But I don't think it was there to shock you.
No.
Another writer might have put something far lesser there to cause you to go, oh, wow.
Well, it made me think. Was two people so relaxed with each other and so open and so like...
I mean, you got to be relaxed.
Yeah,
be
but they seem
but also
so
they're
open
taking
and
pictures
honest.
Of each other's vagina from the first time.
Yeah, and that's
bold. That is bold. Yeah, that is
bold.
Bold.
Okay,
bold.
That's not all
get
lesbians.
Your camera out.
Oh, God. I don't think anyone's got a shot of mine. Not even my wife.
Greta also didn't seem to... Greta doesn't identify as gay at the beginning.
No.
And she's kind of surprised.
Yeah, she's like, when she says she's gay,
am I a lesbian? And then also for Big Swish, she's married to a man. So you feel this very, they have such a relaxed openness with each other and exploratory, like we're on this journey together. Mm-hmm. And that's what I felt at the end. One of the notes I made was like, you really feel how much they love each other.
Yeah.
Like the love, it's not just about sex, even though they have this, you know,
wild
sessions together, which no one knows how
but
to
I
end.
I think their conversations are equally wild when they're in a bar. I think that's why I found them both so aspirational, as they seemed, because someone brilliant was writing them. Like they were in touch with things and understood things and had thought about things.
They're brave. They're definitely brave.
Whereas everyone I know is talking about box sets. You know?
I'm not, mate. I just thought that there was... It was almost like the sexuality. It's how I imagined people might be in 100 years.
Yeah.
Like no one's using labels. No one really
It wasn't a big deal.
It's just
we
had this connection.
Yeah.
And then we were having sex.
And then that's when we get to a much... purer place with gender, when people wouldn't have to fight with language to go, this isn't anything, this is something.
They loved each other and she still loved her husband. Like that both of those things were true, you know? And that's what, like you said, it was just a pure attraction and love. And
she was still jealous of the idea of her husband transgressing. Even
I mean, that scene where she goes and has dinner with Big Swiss and her husband.
Yeah, that's wild, isn't it? Yeah. I loved that bit.
I loved it as well.
This is really...
And when she gets drunk, doesn't she?
She microdoses.
She microdoses.
And their dog is licking her foot under the table. There was a moment after she's listened to the therapy session where Flavia is talking about her horrific assault, where Greta talks, imagines how she would have reacted in her 20s.
Mm.
And I thought it was so funny in how dark it was, but how truthful I found it. And I think that's what I kept finding in this book, is that it wasn't trying to be silly in its bigness. It was trying to be more truthful.
Yeah.
About how, so for instance, about how people behave in the bedroom. The example she uses is like, okay, so Greta had only learned to say no like a couple of years ago. I thought that was very funny. Mm. Sort of a 45-year-old character. I'm 42.
And also like really truthful.
That's a real, it's a really sad reflection of reality, but that is something probably lots of people would. But she basically was imagining, you know, if someone was trying to assault her, possibly going to rape her, how she might pretend that she had a yeast infection and then describe the colour of the discharge. And if that didn't put them off, maybe they'll leave you alone.
They're really rich characters, both of them. Like, and I think, you know what I mean? I don't think they're aspirational, but I fell in love with both of them.
Mm.
Like, I didn't want to be them, but I absolutely wanted to be their friends and hear about what was happening with them. Like, I wanted to not be in that circle. Mm. And like Sabine, the crazy woman that she's living with, I was like,
I'd
love to visit.
I want to have a fag with Sabine.
Yeah. And it was, you know, the secrets that everyone's holding. Sabine's got secrets. Greta's got secrets. And it was the idea of people being so honest. And Greta and Swiss are so honest, but then also they're not, because Swiss is lying about her in the therapy session. So it's like,
you know, it's so honestly, they just felt so alive to me.
Yeah, they did.
And I think
sometimes
lives that probably aren't very fun to live can look really alive from the outside.
I definitely
like
wanted
dramatic.
To, like I said, know them, but I didn't want to be them. I was like, this sounds really stressful.
It's so interesting how you're saying that, because I, as I said to you when I first read, I'd recently listened to the episode of this with the brilliant Monica Heisey, and it's sort of that energy of Greta has that energy of someone that has recently left a relationship and has that like, I'm going to do what I want to do, like I'm kind of wild, I'm like really, I'm really holding on to this sort of madness,
freedom that I've clawed my way out of.
There's like an openness that is sort of, you know, when everything, as you guys were saying with the episode with Monica, like when everything's out there, you're sort of completely shameless. And no, I don't mean that in a bad way, but because you're like, I'm so broken. Like, I don't care what you know.
I don't
care that I'm crying in front of you, because I've got nothing else.
There's this line that's wonderful about Big Swiss in the description of her. Her only need, seemingly, was to satisfy her own curiosity.
Mm.
And that's the kind of thing that makes me go, everything I'm doing in my life is wrong. I should be doing this, even though it's not very practical. But I wonder if this is why stand-up is so alluring, because you get to write this biography of yourself where you said the right thing, or you said something that, or you just, you make stuff up, you make a sort of mythical version of yourself that's slightly bigger and much better. I don't know if you agree, Susie.
Yeah.
And then you keep telling people, hoping they'll believe you.
Until it becomes true, in a way, until you match the stage version.
And there are
version.
Comics whose on-stage persona is more fully rounded than them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've met those ones, Jesus. Yeah.
But that, it's funny, isn't it? I remember when I was single, and when I, because I'm quite confident on stage and quite bombastic, and I sort of really march around the stage and I'm very big. And I remember going on dates with girls who had seen me at a gig or knew had seen me on a thing, and I could tell after about half an hour they were quite disappointed. Like, I remember thinking, like, you thought you were going out with that version, actually the version that you've got is this, like, slight, like, I'm on a date and I'm slightly more nervous and I'm being a bit weird, actually, because I don't really know where I'm not this confident person that you thought.
That's that famous quote, Rita Hayworth quote, which goes, they go to bed with Gilda and they wake up with Rita,
right?
And it's like it's the film, the sexiest woman in the world, and they wake up, I'm obviously just a human, and they're like, oh. And it's like, because I can never live up to that.
Yeah.
Like,
also, it would be so rude what they think they want, which is a show. You know, it's not enjoyable.
She got a mic out.
Stop doing your stuff on
me. Pizza Express is like walking around the table.
Funny thing, how do I have dates at Pizza Express?
Yeah. You say that. Back in the day, 2-for-1 voucher days. Yeah. I don't want to ruin the ending, but that's what's interesting. Oh, I don't know if we can talk about it.
Surely you can just say spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Fast forward this bit. That I found the ending a bit sad for Big Swiss. And that's when I found that interesting, that Greta to me felt free at the end and Big Swiss really didn't. It felt like she was locked into another level of trauma. And I was a bit surprised, I suppose, which is good writing, that Greta, you sort of leave her at the end and you feel like something has changed and she's worked through. But with Big Swiss, I was like, I feel like you're stuck in the same because of the incident that happens. Towards the end.
And that's sort of what confirms to me that so much of her is an act.
Yes.
You know, all of this, the coldness, the I don't care, because it feels like she'll always be there.
She's just playing
this version of what she wishes she could be.
Because she looks that way as well, because she is tall and blonde and beautiful. You can be cold and aloof because the world will still visit you, you know.
Yeah, and because that way that she doesn't have to, I don't know that she's ever going to totally process what happened to her.
But also some things you can't. I mean, I think...
Yeah, totally. It felt like Greta had taken like a positive step forward.
Yeah.
And which sort of felt unfair in a way to me.
That's how I felt.
I felt like Big Swiss had been kind of... I don't know. I guess Greta had sort of, because of the imbalance, because of the fact that it was always sort of built on a lie.
Yeah.
Greta comes off better in the end.
Yeah, and Greta is free.
And Big Swiss is even more trapped.
Big Swiss isn't. Yeah, she's more trapped. Yeah.
She, you know, she's in a marriage, but I don't know that she's as honest with her husband as she is with Greta. And it feels like she's been brave enough to go, here I am in every way. And now in a different way, there's been an abuse of like her privacy.
Yeah.
So if anything, she's going to be colder.
Yeah.
Like, I think Big Swiss has been left colder by the relationship.
Yeah.
And Greta has been left with more options, with a freedom.
I guess by being caught out and people dealing with her kindly rather than she being actually punished, like her employer then gives her therapy, which is so integral
and which is actually
helpful to
her. After laughing about him for the whole book, you realise, he's actually helping her. Yeah. She actually does need...
good?
Yeah. At the end, you're like, he's actually useful.
Or in that instance, he was.
And that, for me as well, what I thought was, it's interesting that we match trauma. Oh, they both had these traumatic events, whereas actually it felt like Greta had something she could work through. Mm. Obviously, her mother taking her own life is huge and awful and horrific, but what Big Swiss had been done
through that, I guess,
was such a different kind of violent trauma, and actually they weren't equal, and Big Swiss couldn't just like start to learn to grow her life around it. It was I was like, they're not equal.
Well, I guess there's a fear element, which, you know, which I think would be overwhelming. I've not had a grief anything like what Greta has, but it happened, and then, you know, there has been days since it. I suppose when you have experienced that sort of violent thing.
Yeah.
Like, Greta can't lose her mum
again. Yeah.
But what happened to Big Swiss could and in the book feels...
Yeah, it is, you know, the person who did it is out of prison. Yeah.
So I guess that it's... I just don't know why she hasn't moved.
I also had that thought.
But then the book wouldn't be written.
They would never have met each other, guys.
Yeah. God, it was a really good book. Like, I really enjoyed it. And I felt as well, I immediately put it down and was like, oh, I can see why that's done so well. Because I felt like it was something I hadn't read before.
Yeah.
It felt fresh.
Yeah.
And it felt like a really interesting take. And those, the people and the world and all of it. And again, I was like, oh, that should be a television series. Like,
I feel that I like them more after our chat. I started off being like, ugh, these two women. And now I've got a bit more sympathy for them.
I was trying to find a page. She talked about blondes. She does have a thing about how people look at you if you're blonde.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Do you find
that,
Sarah? Have you ever had dark hair?
Yeah.
And do you think do you think people treat you differently if you're blonde?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's the same as being in your 40s where they don't look at you. But they do. When you're young and you've got blonde hair, they look at you. And not that that's necessarily a nice thing.
No.
It's like being famous. It's like being famous in shops and on the bus. So which makes you feel really self-conscious. And then if you've got dark hair or you've aged, they stop. this is what I love, this description about Pignon. He'd vacationed abroad. His beverage of choice was iced black coffee. Greta thought of him as debonair, a word that meant more to her than simply charming and confident, and applied more to dogs than to men. Pignon took pleasure in most things, but wasn't overly attached or committed to any one thing. Not even Greta, not even living. And I've written, how I'd like to be. I love black coffee. I'd love to be debonair and not care.
Pignon is aspirational.
He is aspirational.
I will give you that. I will definitely give you that.
If he had blonde hair, he'd have it all.
I think that could be our last line.
Yeah.
Susie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It was so nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Also, can I just very quickly say, we are going to end, but you're dyslexic.
Yes.
And I think it's really... important to say that because sometimes people contact us and reading can be such a chore for some people or something they've been put off because of things like dyslexia.
I wear pink glasses.
Yeah,
pink
you've said that's glasses. Game changer.
Yeah, it really helps. I'm really into reading, but it's quite a recent thing because I, for a long time, I would be sort of like, oh God, that's going to take me forever. Mm. And I'd really like put a constraint on myself about reading. But in recent years, I read loads now. And I think if you're someone that is dyslexic and you feel like that, it's good to remind yourself that like no one's timing you.
Yeah. Take as long as you need.
And pink glasses help.
And reading is supposed to be pleasurable, not having a go at yourself.
Yeah. And they look pretty cool.
And I'm kind of a cool dude.
Thank you so much
Thank
for reading
with
us. It's
been my pleasure. I really enjoyed reading with you.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club. My novel Weirdo and Carrie Ad's book You Are Not Alone are both available now. I've also got a live event at the South Bank Centre coming up in May. Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carrie Ad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.